In drag and club kid culture, the freakier you look, the more beautiful you are. So for many gender and sexually non-conforming folks, embracing being a weirdo in the nightlife scene is a wonderful way of unlocking the beauty that lies within.
Today, bearded beauty Jer Fay, who hosts a lip sync contest for those in and out of drag, joins us to tell us his story of growing up Baptist in Texas, falling in love with a boy in seventh grade, and being forced into state-mandated torture to force him to hide his sexuality.
Listen as Jer Fay shares his heartbreaking story about being ripped apart from his best friend and what it took to reconnect with him years later.
Plus, the internet is once again lip-syncing for its life. Are you prepared to let net neutrality sashay away?
Are guys really contouring their dongs to make them look bigger?
And the human Ken doll, Justin Jedlicka, freaks out the squares at a high-profile political gala in Australia.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Feast of Fun is a lot less fun when your favorite podcasts, videos, or websites load slowly. Whether you go online for news, dick pics, interviews, or just some good old-fashioned keeking, the internet's at its best when you, not internet service providers, decide what you get to listen, watch, and read online. Today, Mark and I are calling on you to be the heroes we need. Please go to battleforthenet.com and tell the FCC and the Republicans you support the open internet. That's battleforthenet.com. Hey everyone, our guest today is bearded beauty. Definitely expands the definition of beauty. Jer Fay!
Hi!
Thick and juicy.
Yes.
Pretty and pink.
Beardo weirdo.
A beardo weirdo.
Jer Fay, Bear Queen.
Bear Queen performs regularly here in Chicago at a nightclub called Berlin, not the city in Germany, but the nightclub. Your night's called Outsynced, a karaoke style lip sync competition.
Yes, so you just come in, you sign up, and you just pick your favorite song and you lip sync to it. So and then we rank you, and you might win a bar tab. So free drinking money.
Do you come in drag? Do you come in costume?
You can come in drag, or you can come off the street as you are. Like, we've had all types of different performers come in.
People really want to just, they're like, no, I don't want to lip sync it. I want to just do the karaoke. Can I just sing it?
No, you can't. You cannot just sing. We do not want to hear your voice.
So the idea of the contest, why are you calling it a karaoke? Is there any...
Just because you can come in and sign up just like you would for karaoke.
Oh, I see.
And you pick your song
style. Yeah. But it's a lip syncing competition.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. But it's very low pressure and you just come in as you are. Or if you want to use it as practice for drag, some people do that.
And can you bring your own track or it has to be something that a DJ already has?
We pull it up off YouTube. So Whatever song you want, we'll find it on YouTube.
Or you can't bring like a CD or a cassette tape or 8-track or something.
No, we try to keep it simple so we don't require much from you.
Just put that shit up on YouTube.
Yeah.
And then put it on YouTube. On
that's true. Why would
Oh my God. Make your own mix and then load it on YouTube.
Why not?
They'll be like, I'm sorry, this is unavailable. Available for DMR or whatever it is.
Yeah, digital rights management.
I love
DRM,
it.
That's it.
Yeah, and if Republicans have their way, like, there won't be a YouTube by the time their next show.
Oh my gosh, around. That's so scary.
Today, the internet, the battle for net neutrality, a lot of websites shut themselves down, and they're all like, stop the corporate takeover of the internet.
Well, they said they're going to slow some things down, like some of them, like Amazon said they were going to slow down, right? Mm-hmm. But then they also had Amazon Prime, was it yesterday?
Yeah.
So they like, I'm going to have this big sale, and then the next day, we're slowing things down.
And did they?
I don't know if they actually did or not. I didn't go on Amazon today, so I couldn't really tell.
Well, it's funny. I wonder if that explains why, over the past couple of days, I've actually had issues with Netflix and Hulu. Like, and I had to,
it's
had to
been
go
on, because they've been throttling their
I wonder if that's actually why, because I didn't know this was going on until you told me that. And so I'm wondering if that's why I was having issues.
It could be that. It could be the weather. Weather will change things. You know, things can happen.
But, and we'll talk more about what net neutrality. You know, I'm surprised that a lot of people still don't know what net neutrality is. And part of it is like, It's kind of like clean water coming out of your faucet.
Like Flint,
or electricity,
Michigan?
Or Flint, Michigan. Yeah, mm-hmm. So basically, they want to, you know, rich people want to take over the internet and things that we take for granted, they're going to piecemeal it and serve it back to us on a cold plate.
Well, the big telecom organizations, companies, that, you know, they built basically our infrastructure, even though we have paid taxes over the years to kind of make this infrastructure happen. And now they're saying, well, now we built it, now for you guys to use it, we want to charge you to be able to access it. And so the big companies like Netflix, they're looking at Netflix and saying, you guys are making billions of dollars. We want a cut of that for you to kind of even get into the pipeline or else we'll just throw it. And so it also affects, you know, little guys like us because, you know, for us to upload things, they might be like, I'm sorry, you're uploading too much. Now we have to charge you more money to upload anything to the internet.
And technically speaking, that infrastructure was paid for by us. They did not spend a penny of that. In fact, we gave a lot of line fees. That's what your line fee is for your phone and your cable and all that stuff, to these telecommunication companies, and they kept most of it and they did not invest it in their infrastructure. And that's why the United States is woefully behind internet speeds that other countries like even South Korea take for granted. So it's a terrifying situation. But let's talk about your gorgeous bearded beauty looks. To relax people and to dream of a wonderful world where
let's drag go from dystopian future
to a utopia that you've created in your nightclubs. You sort of encourage people to be outlandishly, freakily be themselves.
Yeah, I just want people to feel welcome to, like, let their freak flag fly around each other. And, like, we're a community, and I feel like, especially a lot lately, we've been losing that unity part of our community. And so...
How have we been losing it?
I do feel like a lot of people, especially with all the Facebook drama, people, like, wanting to jump out and read each other. And so I feel like...
The call-out culture.
Yeah, and I feel like people are getting frightened to be their own entity. And so I just am loving that, like, even with all that going on, we have people coming out, doing their own thing, creating these awesomely weird looks that to, you know, normal culture would be so... outlandish. But
well, this is one thing that Mark and I have observed, that if you're a successful nightclub entertainer, some other girls are going to come after your gigs. And so they wait for you to say one thing or do one thing that they can start an internet campaign, mostly on Facebook. Yeah. And be like, you are triggering me, or you're questionable, or you're problematic. And the club should rescind your night for being,
so they can swoop in and take it.
So they can take it. And part of it is like it's a jealousy situation. And part of them is like, oh no, she's not going to get on RuPaul's Drag Race before I get, so I could come back and charge, you know, $6,000 for what I'm being paid $25 a night.
Yeah, well, I think that some of it is justified. Some of it is about, like, your personality and, like, what you're doing toward other people. And I do think that some of it is, it's an attempt to take that cattiness that you see, like, on Drag Race, like in Untucked, like the stuff that we love to thrive on, people trying to take that to social media in statuses and stuff. And I think that it ends up getting misread a lot. And so then people get offended, and then they start fighting back, and it just turns into arguments, and that's where it gets lost and starts kind of like breaking down the unity part of what we're trying to go for, you know. And we're all just supposed to be out here, like, shining and being our weird selves. And
but, you know, fights happen in the club too. I've seen some brawls out in the day. Yes. Like, people thrown to the ground, you know, their faces punched in. So in some ways, you know, social, like, people being able to hash it out on Facebook might be a much nicer place to do it.
In the words of the great Coco Montrese, I'm not joking, bitch.
Right. Okay.
Was that on Drag Race?
Yes. Okay. She's like, look how orange you look. And she's like, she got mad. And she's like, I'm not joking, bitch. And the thing about it is, like, you know, specifically Coco Montrese, it's the angrier she gets, the funnier she gets in some ways. And you know, I think one of the toxic things about drag culture with Drag Race is that we're sort of turning our very real distress into a form of entertainment. And we're not, sometimes it's hard, especially with drag, because we're playing these characters. We've become these beautiful creatures of our own imagination. And then it's sometimes we forget that there's a human being underneath that wig, as James Mansfield says.
But I think that what happens then is you see somebody doing something different than what you're doing, and it freaks you out. Like, even in our culture, like, even though we're all doing our own weirdly beautiful things. Like, mm-hmm. and then we see somebody else doing something different and we want to be catty and kind of joke about it like drag queens do, but then you don't know what to say about it because then you're also kind of questioning it. And if you accept it yourself, you know what I'm saying? Like when I started doing drag as a bearded queen, mm-hmm. like I had a few people coming up to me and being like, why are you doing bearded drag? Like I competed at Roscoe's once and I had some, I had some stranger come up to me and be like, do you feel like you're making a mockery of drag? And like, you're competing with these other queen. You're competing
I
with
hope
these,
you are.
You're competing
drag
with these other
is
girls.
A mockery of drag.
So like, you yeah. know what I'm saying? Like mm-hmm. we look at things right. and like, maybe a regular, like a, you know, a pageant queen would look at me and she appreciates it, but she's kind of offended by it because it's not what she does.
There's the eye roll there.
Yeah, exactly. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? And so, that's kind of what I was alluding to, you know, mm-hmm. we kind of like fight each other mm-hmm. in this like thing, but
and so how do you create how do you fight that fight? How do you say, you know, when you come in to Gerfay's Hour of Charm, Outsynced, how do we create a healthier community? How do we address conflict?
Well, I actually also have started this little thing I do. We've only done it once so far, but it's a Gerfay swap. And I get a bunch of queens together who want to do it, and I randomly pair them up. And they have to spend the whole day together. It's like a Sunday, and they spend the whole day together painting each other and doing each other's looks. And then we all go out to, like, queen or something. We did it for the IML queen.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
It was really fun. There were about
so build community yeah. because you put each other in each other's shoes.
Yeah, there were about 8 or 10 of us that
fit.
Did it. Exactly.
It's like, girl, I'm a size 14.
I'll wear sandals.
I'm going to make you look so beautiful. People are going to think you're a model.
No, but it's fun because you get to teach each other either how to like paint somebody else's face for the mm-hmm. first time, or like you get to show them what you do for your face, and then you also style each other, and it's just fun because you also get like to meet that. Somebody new.
Mm-hmm. So who are you paired up with usually?
We've only done it once so far, and okay. I was paired up with so the main part of the group this time was a bunch of newer queens, and mm-hmm. I was paired up with a girl named Martini Weenie.
Mm-hmm. And I painted, I'm so sorry, Martini Weenie.
I painted a beard on her, and I called her Parfait. I called her my daughter Parfait that night.
Well, that's really great. And you so, know, it and so you, it's kind of like a pajama party, but in reverse. It happens during the day.
Yeah,
and at the end of it,
we all go out and we party.
Yeah. And you have a really good time together.
Yeah, exactly. It's really fun. So I like doing that kind of stuff. And then like also like a year ago, I organized a dance class with Shay, and we call it Sashay. And
Shay
who? Shay Coulee.
Shay who?
Exactly.
Is she the third runner-up or fourth runner? Second runner? I forget. What?
Shady.
No, because, you know, she's not one, she's not two. Is she three or four? Or does it
isn't
matter?
Isn't she tied? Wouldn't you say she's tied for third?
Tied for third?
Who? I'm blanking out. Did she lip sync in the final round? No,
well,
she didn't.
She lost.
It was Peppermint.
She lost to Sasha. So yes. Does that make her third?
I think so. Or basically, she didn't get to the top two. Okay. That's all right. You know what? She's the number one in our hearts.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because she's from Chicago and she knows where I live and she'll cut up my wigs if I don't talk nice about her.
Well, she's also a fucking badass dancer. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, she's also working with, she's trying to rehabilitate Iggy Azalea and Azalea Banks' careers, is a very difficult task.
Wait, is she doing some of the Iggy Azalea, too?
She's working with Azalea Banks and Azalea Banks is working with Iggy Azalea.
Oh,
so
okay.
I don't know if the two are going to overlap or not. We talked about this a little bit on the show the other day with Tracy Tyler, but you know, Shay's put out a thing. She's like, listen, that's her experience. I don't know what her experience is, but you know, I don't want anybody to invalidate her experience, and if you don't like it, don't buy it.
Right.
Basically, is that kind of thing.
So
it's
true.
Just like, we're gonna do this and see how it turns out. And
well, also you have to learn, like in the arts, there's also yeah. this thing of like supporting the art, not the artist. Like mm-hmm. if you don't like what the artist does, that you can still appreciate their art. You know, and so sometimes that's what you have to do.
Yeah.
It is nice to see, what is it, people on social media be like taking Shay Coulee's tweets against Azalea Banks.
Oh,
and be
Lord.
Like, remember when you said this a year ago?
Well, and listen, it's like, I'm sure Shay will have no problem telling Azalea Banks what she thinks.
I think it's actually really healthy that Azalea Banks has chosen somebody who's been very critical of her in the past mm-hmm. to collaborate mm-hmm. with. And I'm really excited to see mm-hmm. what actually happens.
Yeah, it'll mm-hmm. be interesting. And I think it's smart for Azalea to kind of reach out to somebody like Shay, because it's like, in many ways, it's like, I don't, you know, I'm not really sure exactly where her career is at, but I think that, you know, she really, a lot of gay people don't like her because of some of her past comments. So she's not getting the pride gigs. And neither is Iggy Azalea, because people were just like, oh, we don't want her either. And I don't really see her in any kind of mainstream kind of thing. So,
and if you were somebody who has, you know, stepped on a lot of toes and farted in crowded elevators, who would you want to, who would you ask to collaborate with you to sort of make up for those mistakes? It would be Shea Coulee.
Yeah.
Shea Coulee is one of the most vocal, one of the most intelligent, right now one of the most successful media personalities.
But she's also supportive. Like, she's also really supportive. Like,
well, she's criticized Azalea Banks tremendously in the past, so it's a really smart idea for Azalea Banks to reach out to Shea Coulee and say, what can I learn from you?
Wouldn't it be wonderful if, like, Shay worked with her? She's like, I am not working with this bitch again. She's crazy.
Oh my god.
Well, I shouldn't say crazy, because she does say that she has some mental health. She suffers from depression and stuff.
She's a tyrant. No, I don't know. She's a monster. We don't know. So I'm looking forward to seeing it. You know, and certainly Shay's part of is a Chicago hometown girl. So I'm curious to see what comes of that.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens with it.
And so, you know, for people who go to nightclubs and they see all these people dress up so outlandishly, you know, the outlandish is celebrated. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. To the point that sometimes, you know, you guys step on each other's toes to be more outrageous. Why are LGBT people and, you know, gender and sexual nonconformists of any type so attracted to being outrageous in nightclubs?
Because I feel like in the heteronormative world, we've grown up feeling ostracized in a way, you know, like people have made fun of us, or even if like people didn't know and so we weren't made fun of it, like we knew ourselves and so we had to hide that. And so being able to go out and exaggerate that outlandish side, like, you know, some people do it literally with, like, you know, feminine side versus masculine side, and they exaggerate one or the other of those. But some people just do it with the outlandishness of it and like feeling like an outsider almost, but celebrating the outsiderness. Like, you know, Nico does the alien streetwalker thing.
And so Nico's not the Andy Warhol superstar, but is a drag queen here in Chicago who because people don't know who
Nico is.
Yeah. And so describe Nico for people who haven't met Nico.
Nico is an alien queen. She's an amazing performer.
Somebody who sort of like compares themselves to, you know, E.T.
Well, no.
Or what?
I don't know about that.
The Sigourney Weaver alien.
I don't know enough about Nico's journey to know who she compares herself to. But I do know that, like, she calls herself an alien streetwalker,
yeah.
And she's got that weirdo look, but it's so beautiful. But I almost feel like that's like a huge celebration of being not from this place, you know. And that's like a huge metaphor for being queer in our modern day culture.
And she's a chrome dome queen like Sasha Velour, who embraces being a misfit, an oddball.
Right. Exactly.
And a lot of people sort of go, why can't you just be a nice pretty girl? Why don't you, you know, take those loops out of your ears and
do you feel like
piercings?
You're making a mockery of drag? Like,
yeah,
the whole thing.
In
yeah.
some ways, you know, you're really tarnishing RuPaul's brand and, you know, all this kind of.
Exactly.
And part of it is like drag has always been about being a rebel. It's about being punk. It's about breaking the system. And as LGBT people, we are scapegoated so much. I mean, you know, you think that it's bad for Russians. LGBT Russians right now, they're importing that over to the United States, courtesy of Trump and the Republican Party. Mm. And they're working really hard to remove marriage equality or even workplace equality across this country. So if we don't get Trump out of the White House, if we don't get Republicans out in 2018, we have a lot of work to do, and it's going to be very painful for us. Mm-hmm. And so for us as LGBT people, throughout the course of our lives, we're scapegoated by corrupt organizations, by corrupt leaders who use us as an excuse to stay in charge.
Right.
And as a consequence, we internalize so much of that hatred and so much of that, monster behavior, that by dressing up as monsters, we're able to transcend the abuse that we've received at the hands of our society.
Right. But then I also feel like people who aren't dressed up like that, that go to the club and see us, they can feel very safe in that space, because they see somebody that's so out there. That's like, you know, even if it's me, a fat, hairy man dressed up in like a wig and maybe a white jumpsuit and heels,
woolly,
you know,
and wild.
Exactly. They can see somebody like me or any other drag queen or club kid and know that if they're welcome in this space, then they're going to feel welcome here, you know? Like,
yeah, people,
if somebody can dress like that and feel at home here, I'm going to feel at home here, you know?
Yeah. Or you can throw peanuts at them and, you know.
Or you could throw peanuts at them.
Be like, freak, freak, freak.
That's the whole thing in a nutshell.
Like the movie. Have you seen Todd Browning's movie, The Freaks?
No, I have not.
It's a must record. You know, if you're a young drag queen out there.
It's very exploitive.
Well, it's the premise of the movie is who is the real freak? Mm-hmm. It was filmed a long time ago in black and white, and it starred a lot of those Ripley's Believe It or Not, sideshow acts, circus acts. The real people behind those characters in American Horror Story Circus. And basically the premise was there was this like gold digger socialite who pretended to fall in love with a little person and manipulated him to giving her his fortune. And it's soon revealed that she is just, you know, she's an awful person. She's the monster. And so the circus sideshow people turn on her and make her one of their own. But you have to watch it. It's on YouTube. And a lot of like great lines, if you heard on RuPaul's Drag Race or elsewhere, come from that movie. Mm-hmm. One of them is like, we accept her, one of us, one of us. Mm-hmm. And another movie is, of course, Paris's Burning, the documentary about drag queens in New York City.
Right.
In the, I believe it was the late 80s, right?
Yeah, the late 80s.
At the height of the AIDS crisis. Mm-hmm. And so, I think drag and club culture and club kid culture, part of it is it's about making use of this horrors that we've experienced.
And turning it into armor.
And turn it into art. You mm-hmm. know, as Carrie Fisher says, when you have a broken heart, you make art.
Mm. And I like that.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, it's a sweet sound. I like that a lot.
Tell me about your experience as a young gay man growing up in Texas. Where exactly are you from?
I grew up 2 hours east of Dallas in Gilmer, Texas, small town, like middle of nowhere. And it was
2 hours east of
Dallas.
So, like, is there a Dairy Queen there?
There's a Dairy Queen and there's a Walmart. When I was growing up, those were the two big things. Apparently, they have there was a Jack in the Box that started when I was in high school. So those are the big things. But apparently, there's like a bowling alley, I think, there now.
Wow, how exciting.
I think. I know there was a skating rink, but I think there might be a bowling alley there now.
Is there an adult porn bookstore on the highway?
No, that's like 20 minutes away. I think
that's
near Gladewater.
That's not too far to travel, though.
And as
those places get hopping, don't they, out in the middle of those nowhere lands?
I wouldn't know. Wink, wink.
That's our sound we make when we wink. How old were you when you met your friend and you guys became sexually active with each other?
We were in sixth grade. I think we were on the school buses when we met. We were coming home from school, and we had to sit beside each other, and me and this boy, we started talking. We decided we were going to be friends, and we found out we lived one street away. And I lived in a trailer park in the country, so like, one street away was just like walk through the acre of wood of trees and mm-hmm. you'll be right at their trailer. So then later that day we went and hung out for a while. And then we did that whole thing, you know, like little boys do. They spend the night with each other and stuff. And then kind of one thing led to another. And we started fooling around with each other. And that's
tell me what it felt like to when you first met him and you guys felt like you clicked.
So I had some experience through some, like, other stuff with boys before. But when I met him, it was just like, I felt like he was instantly my best friend. Like, and we just clicked. Like, we were sitting there talking, and we just started making jokes. Like, I don't remember exactly what it was. I mean, that was, like, years ago. Mm-hmm. But
can you tell us what his name is or was or create a pseudonym for him?
Make a fake name.
Let's call him
Adam. We'll call him Adam.
Adam. Okay. So when you met Adam, you were like, oh my God, I have a friend.
Yeah, I have a friend because I was also at that time in elementary school. I kept getting called faggot a lot. And I think like a year before is when I got punched in the face, like on the bus and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, because, you know, a lot of kids are just mean. Like, sure. Nobody knew what the word faggot or gay meant. They just called that to each other because they knew it was mean. And then when I met him, it was like nice to have a bus buddy to know that like if something happened, like we were going to be friends. So that's what kind of like started our friendship, was we're sitting beside each other making jokes, and it was like really nice for us to have somebody to talk to. And then we started hanging out, and we would spend the night with each other, and then we kind of developed into more. Like, I think if you look at it now, it'd be like, probably feel like a 2-month-old gay relationship, which is like what, 2 years in a gay.
But it's a nice that you actually had that experience.
Exactly. At
sixth grade, you know, where all the boys are learning how to kiss other girls. You're, you know, kissing
another boy.
Yeah.
But in secret always, like nobody knew about
of
that.
Of course. Yeah. So. And you were raised a Southern Baptist.
So my mother and my stepfather married when I was like 8, and about a year or two later, we started going to church very regularly because my aunt started going to church and they started taking us. And then we, like, from that moment on, we became like very devout Southern Baptists. Like, we went every Sunday, every other Wednesday night, you know. And
were the people of the church nice? Like, were they, also called you faggot too as well?
Or? No, the people at the church were nice, but like they attributed my eccentricities to being like a nerdy boy, like a little mama's boy.
I wonder sometimes too, because I hear this story from gay guys that's, you know, their parents weren't necessarily religious when they were younger, but as they get a little older, the parents started like maybe noticing that their kid was gay and was like, I better get to church.
Oh, I wonder if that, if that had anything to do with it, because it was around that time that we started going to church a lot.
They don't know what to make of the fact that you're different than other boys.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to help you.
Yeah. They're just trying to like guide you along. And my stepfather, like, he's a great man, but he wasn't that strong of like a male figure. So I also wonder if that's the case, like if my mom wanted me to get around other men that like would have like a stronger influence on me. You know, like through Sunday school and stuff.
To straighten you out or something.
Yeah.
So eventually your mother finds out that you're having a relationship with this young guy.
Yeah. One night we were having one of our sleepovers and he spent the night and he wanted me to fuck him that night. And I felt
you're in seventh grade.
I'm in seventh grade.
Okay.
And I know this is so weird, but like, I felt like we were too young to actually fuck. We had kind of like fooled around with it before, but we'd never actually done it. And he got mad because I didn't want to do it. So he left, like he went home that night. But instead of spending the night,
I've had that experience before, but at a much older age.
Right. Well, we were watching that show because at that time that they were showing that show, Striptease or whatever on Nick at Night. They had that show and it was like Strip Poker or whatever. Does anybody remember that?
No, I don't know it at all.
Oh my God. I think it was only around for like 1 year and they would strip down to their underwear and it may have been like an old game show that they like were showing at Nick at Night, or it may have been something new, but we were watching it and that kind of led to us like kissing and like getting into it. And then he wanted me to fuck him and I was like, I don't want to do that tonight. And so then he left and the next morning my mom was like, well, where'd Adam go, you know? And about a week later I was in English class and I got called to the office and I went in, there was an old lady sitting at the counselor's desk. The counselor's like, I'm going to leave you two alone. And she said, do you know Adam? And I was like, yeah, I do. And she said, have you guys been hanging out? And I said, yes. And then she did that thing that you only see on TV, but like you never expect it to like really be real. But she's like, here's what good touching is and here's what bad touching is.
Does she have a doll?
No, she didn't have a doll. Thank God.
She pulled out a Billy doll.
I might have busted out laughing if she pulled out like a doll. I was like, where did he touch you?
Had you seen that before as a kid? Like when people talking about that good touch, bad touch? Or
because like the TV shows and stuff.
Emmanuel Webster and Michael Jackson, this is a true story, made an album about good touch, bad touch.
Oh Lord.
No. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, and so the high school guidance counselor asked you about that.
Yeah, so, well, no, she had left. Okay. This was the lady, I didn't know who she was yet. I still didn't know who she was.
An unidentified adult figure.
Yeah, so school. She was like, do you know what good touching is and bad touching? And have you two been bad touching? And I was like, I didn't know, like, I was just honest. I was like, yeah, we have. And she said, okay, well, and that's when she said who she was. She said, I'd give her like Deborah. I don't remember her name.
Debbie. Detective Debbie.
And she said, I'm from Child Protective Services. And since you have confirmed that this is what you two have been doing, I do need to speak to your mother. Now, I think my mother was working because we tried to call her like 3 times and she wouldn't answer. So she left a voicemail for my mother. Well, it wasn't voicemail then. It was just like on the answering machine. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, why, it feels like years ago.
Why didn't you deny it at the time? What? Because most kids would be like, hell no.
Because when she started asking
about... You know where this is going.
When she started asking about it, I knew I would... it felt immediately like I was in trouble.
Mm. Okay. So you wanted...
And so I just wanted to be...
Fess up, get it over with.
Yeah, I was like, if I'm going to tell the truth, it's kind of like when I watch porn and, you know, Ma caught me, then I I just kind of own up to it and get it over with. Like, so I thought that's just kind of what it was. And then after I confirmed it, she was like, I'm from Child Protective Services. Like, oh, this is a lot worse than I knew. Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen now. And after she got the phone, after she left the voicemail saying that she needed to speak to my mother and whatever, she was like, so what's going to happen now is you're going to go about the rest of your day. And then whenever I get a hold of your mother, we're going to talk and we're going to see what sort of steps we need to take to prevent any further action from happening. And like, I'm in seventh grade. I had no idea what that meant. Like, I know what child at that. I mean, everybody knows what Child Protective Service is when you're growing up in like Texas. I don't know how it is elsewhere, but you know that like they.
Well, you grew up in a trailer home, so in a park. So
yeah, you know that like a lot of that. You know that they're the type. Mm-hmm. They're the type to take you away and put you in foster care, all that kind of stuff. So then I went back to class and I'm like shaken up and I was crying the whole way back to class and I had to stand outside the classroom and I was like freaking out, didn't know what was going on. And then I get home and my mother, is there and she sits me down on the couch and she's like, so what happened? Like what happened today? And I was like, well, I got called into the office and there was a lady from Child Protective Services there. And she goes, what did you tell her? And I told her like, why'd you tell her anything? You shouldn't have told her anything. Basically, you know, like, that whole thing where you're like, you're not supposed to say anything to anybody unless you have a lawyer present or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
She didn't say anything about the lawyer, but she was like, why'd you say anything to anybody? And so then I'm already feeling worse. And then we get a phone call and my mother answers it. And she talks to somebody for a minute. And then she goes, here he is, and hands me the phone. And it's Adam's stepmother. She says, so why did Adam come home early the other night, like a week ago? And immediately I knew that she knew, and I knew that she was the reason for all of this whole thing. Mm-hmm. So I just start crying and my mother takes the phone and she says, I'll talk to you later. And then my mother's like, then we both kind of realize what's happened here. And basically the story washes out that she found that Adam had written in his diary that night that I didn't want to like go to the next step that night or something. I don't know exactly what he wrote, but,
but she read it.
Yeah. And then she called Child Protective Services basically saying that my parents were allowing Adam and I to like fuck around in their home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that constitutes as like child molestation or something. I don't know what it constitutes as, but like for some reason we got in trouble for it. And
those diaries, you know, when you write shit down, it's like your parents always find them.
I know you can't have a diary ever. Kids, take a heed the warning.
Yeah. Well, now kids put it on Tumblr and stuff anonymously, but you know,
I used to have a Zanga. Anybody remember Zanga?
And so this is what year are we looking at? 1999 or so? Or
I graduated in 2005, so 7 years before that.
Like okay. 98 or so.
Five years before that. So yeah, like 99.
Okay. And so what happened after that?
So then I don't remember, I don't know what discussions happened between my mother and the Child Protective Services lady. All I know is that about a week later, for months, I had to go once a week to a therapeutic counselor for restorative therapy, where he would sit me down and talk to me about what kind of feelings I was having for boys, what kind of feelings I was having for girls. So while I'm doing that, I'm also having to go to religious therapy with a pastor of another church because they don't want me to go talking to somebody that I know that I see all the time. So I had to go see somebody else. And so then he's telling me, this is what the Bible says about what you're feeling. This is what the Bible says about this and that. So for about, I don't remember how long, for a couple months at least, I was doing both of these types of therapy once a week.
And this was from the state of Texas, the Child Protective Services, telling your mother, you have to go to
or else
they'll take you away from them.
The secular therapy was required.
Mm-hmm.
And the religious therapy was encouraged. and recommended, which is why my mother did it, because we were so devoutly Southern Baptist that, like, she's like, if that's you know, recommended, we might as well go ahead and do it.
And the aim of it was reparative therapy. Like, you were supposed to not, or so-called reparative therapy.
I was supposed to not feel the way I felt about Adam for any other boy at the end of this therapy. And like, part of it included, the counselor being like, so what do you feel for boys? Like, do you feel tingling down there? Like, do you get hard? Do you feel sexually attracted to men? And of course I'm like, yes, I do, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, so do you happen to have any pictures of like your friends who are girls that you like, that you hang out with a lot? And, you know, I had a picture of my friend Ashley and, in my wallet, 'cause you know, kids always pass out their wallet pictures when they get them for school. And he said, well, let's see it. And so I handed it to him. And he's like, so look at this picture. And anytime you start feeling the way you feel about a boy, I want you to pull this picture out and I want you to try to feel that way about her. And so it got very weird because I know her and I saw her every day at school.
And you're like, I'm supposed to be turned on by you, but I'm not.
Right.
And you're still friends with her to this day.
Yes, I am still friends with her to this day. Yeah.
And you still have not told her
about it. I still have not told her about...
I tried to masturbate to your photo and it didn't work.
Just because, I mean, how weird would that be to tell somebody? Like,
no, it would be weird, but it's also, you know, it seems like it's a big part of what you've gone through.
I mean, maybe we'll discuss it now that this is coming out to light. So
The reality for a lot of people who get, you know, we need to come with a better word than reparative is, you know...
is what they call it, right?
Torture therapy.
It's torture.
It's torture, period, in the disguise of trying to cure you of your homosexuality.
It was seriously electrocution.
It's starvation. It's physical abuse, sexual abuse. Actually, a lot of people who are in these positions all across the country are usually child molesters or they're rapists. And they use their, you know, we've had on this show one of the reparative therapists try to have a sexual relationship with his client. And so, you know, we're putting LGBT people when they're most vulnerable in the hands of very unscrupulous people. And part of it is like, you know, you have to forgive your parents because in some ways they don't know any better and they can't do any better. But on the other hand, it's like, you know, you're putting your child when they're the most vulnerable in a situation that can permanently harm them.
Right. It was a mind fuck. It's already scary because I'm having to try to convince this therapist by the end of it, like whenever the end of it is, that I am on my way to being straight. So that way, if I get converted, basically, then I won't be sent away or taken away from my mother.
So this is you learning acting at a very young age to save yourself.
Exactly. Because, he would play these games. We'd always play Connect Four or something stupid like that. And it was basically a way to get my mind off of what we're talking about. So that way, when he was asking me questions and stuff, it would come off like a natural answer. So I got very good at like trying to pay attention to both at the same time and trying to figure out like, okay, now at this point I should be like, oh, now I'm like masturbating to this picture of her, you know, like now I'm at that point, or now I'm like always thinking about girls, like, you know, like trying to figure out,
so you figured
what
out
part of the process I was in to make it seem like I was progressing toward where they wanted me to be.
Now, do you think the therapist really believed you, or do you think that they were just kind of like, you know, just trying to collect that paycheck?
I have no idea.
And how did it end with the therapist? Was it just like on the last day they're like, here's a gold star, now you're straight?
I just know at the very last meeting I left, and then, you know, every time my mother had to go up and like talk to the person, I don't know if she was paying him or whatever, but then they talked and she was like, okay, we're done. And I was like, okay, we're done.
I like women. Women, 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 women.
And that fucked me up so bad that I didn't touch anybody or do anything sexual with anybody for about 10 years after that, because I was so scared that something bad was going to happen anytime I did whatever.
What was that decade of not having sexual contact with anybody, no romantic contact, and acting as if you were straight like for you?
And you lost your best friend, too, yeah.
Yeah, because Adam, like, disappeared. That whole process, because once the whole child protective services thing came in, then he disappeared, and I had no idea what happened.
Did he run away, or was he sent away?
Well, at that point, I didn't know what happened. We just recently reconnected like 4 or 5 years ago, and I found out what happened, and he got sent back into the system. Like, his stepmother was like, we don't want you in our house, and sent him to foster care. And, like, he went through a whole process of his own. Like, I don't want to share his story, but that's, he had to go through a whole process of going through homes and stuff like that. So this whole time, I didn't know what was going on with that. So, like, I lost that best friend, and who, like, at the time, like, was almost like a boyfriend, you know, basically, because we were hanging out all the time. We were spending the night together. Like,
were you blaming yourself in some ways?
I was, like, I felt like it was my fault. I felt like if I had just fucked him that night, you know, like if I just given him what he wanted that night, then this wouldn't have happened.
But then he would have written in his diary, like, I had the best sex of my life.
Oh my God.
You know,
maybe.
I wanted more. I mean, it's a situation. It's hard to describe and put into words. And so those 10 years, how did you get to where you are today now as this really intelligent, grounded, sexually owning your own sexuality, and
you're the you're at the clubs dancing in a jockstrap up and like being a go-go boy.
Yeah, and I blew a man in drag once.
You're a people person.
I am a people pleaser.
you give the audience what they want.
Exactly.
You're happy to entertain.
Well, I basically had my sexual like reawakening my junior year of college, because me and a good friend of mine at the time, we got drunk and we just started fooling around. And then I was like, this is what it's like. This is what I've been missing. And so then I did the whole Craigslist thing, because I went to college at a Southern Baptist school in Arkansas. Very conservative, very hush hush. Like, you don't do anything gay there. And so I went through the whole Craigslist thing of like finding hookups. And then I got a boyfriend over the summer. And then, but for a couple years, until about a year or two, maybe a year after I lived here in Chicago, which I moved here 7 years ago, every time I had sex, even though it'd be great, I would be really ashamed of it. And I think it all kind of ties back to that whole, like, I'm scared something might, there's going to be some repercussions for this, but,
why wouldn't you be?
Yeah, exactly. So like every time I'd have sex, it'd be like, oh, in the moment I'm having fun. And then I'd go back home and I'd be like, oh, I'm just waiting.
I mean, I'm seeing your body language right now as you recounting the story. And I really want to thank you for your courage to be able to tell this. Really, it feels like the feelings are still very fresh for you. And imagine it's some type of pain that you never really get over.
Well, because you get to that point where you just kind of like push it all behind. You don't really, you just kind of like move forward and you like concentrate on the pyramid you've built on top of the tomb, you know, like, so, but like recounting it, and you still got to go kind of deep to get there. Like even,
So it was sort of like rediscovering your own sexuality. And thankfully, like, you had that drink with that friend that night. And
right. Like, I actually don't know how long it would have been with me going without sex, if, like, I hadn't had that night with him, because that kind of, like, that seriously reopened my eyes. I think the very next day I was on Craigslist.
How did you even know?
He told me.
Oh, he's, like, going Craigslist. So he had had some experience.
What year
he
talking had some about experience. Here now? Well, this is, like, 2005, 2006?
This was 2008.
Wasn't it Grindr and
Didn't come until like 2009, and then who knows if you even
it was beta version in 2010, because I had a BlackBerry in 2010, and I had to sign up to be one of those like 1,000 people that got the beta version of Grindr.
What other hookup sites did you use?
I used Craigslist a lot then, and then I moved over to Manhunt and Adam for Adam.
They're still around, both of those sites.
I know they are.
But if you log in, it's like,
I actually still have an account on Manhunt.
Here?
I actually still have an account
on Manhunt. Do you get some action from it?
No, I just really like going in the video chat rooms.
Oh, well, there you go.
I like to watch people, but...
Well, there you go. But I guess also Craigslist is really good in college towns, they say.
Exactly, yeah.
Because there's just something about, I don't know why they appeal.
Well, I feel like a lot of college guys, like even if they're just experimenting, they're willing to go on and be like, hey, I want my dick sucked by a dude. And so you can just be like, I'll fulfill that pleasure.
Or a drag queen. Loyal is just a few blocks away.
Like, most of the drag queens I know who are sexually active use Craigslist to this day to hook up with some pretty impressive trade.
Multiples.
And I'm just like, damn, Heckalina.
Yeah, but she shows you the pictures of the hot ones, but she doesn't necessarily show you the pictures. You know, Heckalina not too long ago. You know Heckalina from San Francisco?
No.
Oh, she's kind of, people are always joking about just like how hideously unattractive she is as a drag queen. But she posted a picture of herself. I guess she was in the Navy, a picture of herself at 19. And I was just like, I have a whole new respect for her now. I was just like, damn, she was a hot young guy at one point in time.
Aren't we all? But, you know, with a little contouring and makeup.
There's this highlight. Highlight's the key.
There's this weird link bait articles that are popping up all over the internet this week of people bragging about how they're using, you know, the techniques that drag queens use, contouring and highlighting on their face to make them look more feminine, to make their dicks look bigger.
Jeffree Star, the makeup guy and the MySpace superstar, he says that he highlights his penis. He highlights it when it's hard, and so that when it's soft, it looks bigger. So I don't know exactly how he does it, but I'm just kind of like,
I'm just going to dip my dick in my white powder and hope it works.
That's so, cocaine, honey. That's not. Yeah. They'll suck it for anything.
What was it like when you finally reconnected with Adam after all these years? How did you guys rediscover each other?
So actually, he showed up in my junior year of high school. Mm-hmm. Like, he actually showed back up at school, which later I found out due to, like, he telling me his journey. Like, he got put back. He got to live back with his dad again. So, like, he moved back into that house. And so, but we would see each other in the hallway, and he would smile. And I would just stop, like, shell-shocked that I saw him again and kind of go about my day and just ignore him. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, it really bothered me not knowing what happened. Because in my mind, I kind of thought maybe he told his stepmother about the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Or, like, he convinced somebody that I did something. Or I did something to hurt him and he just didn't tell me.
Blaming each other.
Yeah. So I finally reached out and I was like, hey, look, I just want to know what happened. Like, where did you go and all that stuff? And that's when he was like, yeah, I had my own journey that I was going through. And he told me about his story.
The whole diary thing, you didn't know until then?
No, I didn't know it until 4 or 5 years ago when he told me that.
Oh, so it must have been super confusing for you.
Right. So when his stepmother called and was like, hey, why did he leave the other day? And I was like, so it was very, I knew she knew. I didn't know how she knew. So that's why I kind of thought, well, did he tell her, like, what did I do wrong? Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. So,
well, I think part of the reason why I especially wanted to have you on too is because, you know, in Texas, this kind of stuff is, they still want this stuff to go on. They were, even as late as like late last year, they're trying to pass these bills saying that they can do this kind of, you know, so-called reparative therapy and use the, you know, the arm of the government to force kids such as yourself to go through something like this. And to me, it seems it's so awful. Instead of encouraging a kid to celebrate who they are, they're trying to stomp it down.
It really fucks with your brain.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I didn't go through reparative therapy, but, you know, I went to a Catholic school. So it's kind of like I have an inkling of what that kind of does to a person.
And well, don't you feel like that's part of the reason why your parents sent you to an expensive school?
I think so. Because it's like my older brothers and sisters, they didn't go to Catholic schools.
Oh, no.
You know? But no. But like my brother and I, they sent me like second grade to Catholic school. I think that may have been part of the reason. It's because they're kind of like, I don't think this kid's gay.
It's almost like a, you know, a very common experience for a lot. I went to a Catholic school and I never went. My parents were nowhere near that. And when my parents were starting getting a divorce, my mother turned to religion to make sense of that divorce. And as I was becoming a teenager, once again, she put me in a Catholic school. Thankfully, you know, me and my sister who were in that Catholic school said, we hate this. It feels like prison. Get us out of here. And my mother got us out
right
within minutes. Like, it was not like, oh, but, you know, Jesus. More like, oh, yeah, this is bad. This sucks. Let's put you back in your old school.
Well,
yeah.
Your mother was smart. And also to your mother, I think her experience with being trying, her mother would try and control her. So,
well, they tried to put my mother in
an institution. She was like, I'm not going to control my kids and let them be free the way I wasn't allowed to be.
I'm lucky that my grandmother was such a rotten monster that I have such a sweet mother who fortunately did not pass on that chain of abuse to us.
Yeah.
And actually
was able to look at the horrors that she experienced at the hands of her mother, abusive mother, and was able to learn and grow.
Mm-hmm. I saw on Facebook you have a new web series that you're doing, Your Moment of Idiocy.
It's just
I hope
something.
Your appearance on Feast of Fun doesn't show up on there, or it does show up on there.
Oh, I hope we do.
it's just something silly I'm doing.
Just like, the dumb things that happen
to
you.
Yeah, little random stupid things that happen to me. I turn them into this little thing where it's like
what?
The first one was I was watching Netflix and the screen went black during the movie I was watching, except for like a half visual of a face. And I thought it was just my face. I thought the movie had paused. So I like started like checking my face out and like cleaning my face off. And then I realized the face wasn't moving and then it started talking and I like nearly shit myself because I thought it was my face reflecting
Bloody
in the
Mary,
reflection,
Bloody
but it
Mary.
Was the movie still playing.
Oh, weird. You must have been really stoned.
Well, no, I wasn't. I was at work.
Oh, it's actually you'd watch Netflix at
it's
work.
It's actually a moment of idiocy.
The Catholic Church is joining the gluten-free backlash, outlawing communion wafers. For Holy Communion now.
So I guess you can make them out of rice.
For people who are not familiar, Christians, and especially Catholics, are vampires in a sense that they eat a symbolic object representing the body of their religious leader, Jesus, right?
To them, it's not symbolic. It is actually the body of Christ. It's called transubstantiation.
It's literally
yeah. the body of Christ.
And well, isn't that specifically Catholicism? Because yes. I think in Baptist, when we do it, it's like it's symbolic.
Yeah. Some forms, flavors of Christianity is symbolic and some are literal. And so the idea is that by consuming a part of the dead body of your spiritual leader, you are healed to some degree.
You're cleansed, yeah.
You're cleansed. And so it's cannibalism or vampirism, right? Mm-hmm. You're drinking blood, you're eating flesh, and somehow you have everlasting life just like a vampire, mm-hmm. right? By drinking the vampire's blood. And some people actually go as far
Donner
as saying
Party of Christ.
That Jesus was a vampire and that Christianity is a vampiric cult.
Mm-hmm.
To you know, and then so there's, you know, TV shows about it and movies mm-hmm. and all this stuff. And so now the Vatican is saying, you know, this gluten-free trend has to stop. We are a bread, gluten, wheat-eating society, and those Holy Communion wafers need to have gluten in them. And if you're gluten intolerant, switch to something else.
Oh, my Lord.
Well, you can also just drink the wine, but not everybody does the wine. You know, the wine, when I was growing up, they didn't really give you wine at Mass until, like, later as we got older. Then, like, they started reintroducing it. But not a lot of people want to drink the wine because you're basically drinking out of a chalice that everybody else is drinking out of. And sure, they wipe it down.
Isn't alcohol sterilize all that shit?
No, but when you have 200 people drinking out of the same cup.
Ew. Whatever.
My sister Margo.
See, at least we did individual cups of grape juice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's where Baptists have the good juice.
Right.
And growing up, we didn't really do the wine. And so my sister Margot, who hadn't been to Mass for a long time, went to midnight Mass, and she went up and she got her Eucharist. And then afterwards, they offered her the chalice of wine. My sister stuck her fingers in it and then blessed herself with it, thinking it was like holy water.
Well, that's the reason me and my sister.
Oh my goodness, that's hilarious.
I was 14. She was 12. We're like, why does some people of the church get to drink that chalice and we don't? And my mother was like, well, because you haven't been baptized.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Would you like to get baptized? I'm like, do we get to drink booze? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, fuck yeah. So my sister had her what is it when they're your godparents, right?
Oh yeah.
Was my older brother and older sister. Don't ever do that. My godparents was my mom's best friend, who is the mother and father of who became the Archbishop of Puerto Rico.
Oh,
Jesse
really?
Gonzalez. Yeah. So Francis Gonzalez, Jesse Gonzalez, the Archbishop, I think he still is the Archbishop of Puerto Rico, but I'm not sure. I don't follow that religion. Was my godmother.
Wow.
And every fucking birthday that I had, I would get cash in the mail.
Yeah.
And my sister was jealous. But anyways, we you know, we're like, yeah, Jesus. Uh-huh. Where's the booze? And we would like my sister would get the communion thing. We were so cynical. We would get this thing and totally play act, and we would just guzzle. And like, they would have to take it off of us and be like, "Hey, easy there, you know, we know you love Jesus." And we're like,
"Oh my God."
Glug, 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 glug. It was sherry and water. Mm-hmm. But mostly sherry. Mm-hmm. And we're like, "I love drinking out of it because it gets my body so warm."
They wouldn't give you sherry. I'm sure
it was sherry wine sherry and water.
Sherry is fortified wine, so it's wine with added booze to
Baby,
it. I don't think
I was a communion altar boy. I mixed the stuff. I put it into the bottle, and then we would swig a little bit. And then this is how corrupt and crazy it was. My sister, she was so into the communion wafers, she stole the whole bag from them.
Oh, jeez.
And she was like, so she friends would come over and she's like, "You want to eat communion wafers?" Like, it was
but it tastes terrible. The stuff doesn't taste very good.
Well, but in Puerto Rico and Spain, we get almond nougat candy that's made with communion wafers on each side, turrón. So in the holidays, this is like turrón. And my sister like thought it was the tastiest part of the dessert, right? Mm-hmm. Is the communion wafers with almond and sugar and, you know, egg white paste in it. And it's absolutely scrumptious. If you've ever had it, it's really delicious.
Yeah, but you don't get too wrong with that.
No, but it, you know, this is the part, it reminds her of their favorite dessert.
I was an altar boy too, and the wine, we would get the wine ready and whatnot. If we had any extra left over, well, we would try and drink it. Or my buddy Mike, who was my partner, he would always like, "Come on, let's swig some wine." So we'd swig some wine sometimes. But we had a special sink for one, like if the wine wasn't used, then we would dump it down, and the sink didn't go into the plumbing, it went directly into the earth, so that the, you know, the sacred blood of Christ wouldn't go into the sewers, it would go right into the earth itself.
Couldn't you digest it first before it went back into the earth?
You could, and then pee it out.
Yeah.
Hey.
The state of Nevada, who's recent legalized pot, which is recreational marijuana, it's a hit, making millions of dollars in taxes. Meanwhile, the state of Illinois, who is broke,
should be doing that.
Dragging their feet. I know. But we're screwed by Republicans.
Why aren't we doing that yet?
Because the state of Illinois legislature is mostly a Republican legislature.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And we are fucked.
Mm-hmm.
Because the pharmaceutical industries don't want us to legalize it.
Because of that, actually, too. And like, there's a lot of wealth in the northern suburbs, and a lot of those people are heavily invested in the insurance companies and the
Racket.
Pharmaceutical companies. Also, too, possession of marijuana is like one of the main things they can arrest African Americans for, and so they like to be able to like pick people up, especially like on the south side, and be like, "You have pot, you're arrested," and then you enter into the military industrial complex.
So the state of Nevada is doing really great financially right now. They legalized marijuana, and it's been such a hit, they actually ran out of pot.
Well, because it's such a tourist destination, right? Because it's recreational, right?
Yes.
And so if you go there, you can just walk in places and buy it, right?
You can get it. You can go to a stripper club. They got the lines rolled up for you and everything. Unfortunately, the state is in a state of emergency, and the governor is stepping in to ship sweet, sweet ganja because the state is literally.
Where are they
getting
it from?
I was going to say, are they able to grow it there? Is that why they ran out? Like,
well, it's a state of emergency.
I would grow wonderfully there. They have so much sunshine there. But it's, water, they're not. I don't think they grow very much out there. But I think that they can invest with the water that they have.
So Nevada screwed themselves with a law because it prohibits people within 25 miles of any shop from growing pot themselves. So it easily takes away thousands of excess pounds that could be dispensed to shops for the residents there and taxed when sold.
Why would they do that?
Because the pharmaceutical industry is still in charge, honey, baby. I want to do a public service announcement for the internet. The internet's less fun when your favorite sites load slowly, isn't it? Whether you're here on Feast of Fun for news or interviews... or just bullshit, you know. The internet's at its best when your not-so internet service providers decide what you get to see and listen to and watch online. Today, we're calling on you to be the heroes we know you are and go to battleforthenet.com and tell the FCC and your state representatives that you support an open internet. Because the internet sucks when Comcast takes over it, honey. And rich people have always been trying to steal something that's for the common good to line their pockets. And just kind of like environmental change or global warming, the hotter it gets, the faster it gets hotter. And so the more inequality we have in the society, the greedier rich people get. And so they're going to be trying to plunder the internet to line their own pockets and the cost of you and me being able to communicate with each other. In some ways, it's a good thing not to be able to see your mom's status updates on Facebook. But let's get real. You love this podcast. You listen to it all the time. It may, you know, we might not be around. You know, season two of Stranger Things is coming out in October on Netflix, but it might not be around if Comcast and, you know, FCC and Ajit Pai and Trump and the Republicans get their way. We might not have an internet as soon as in the fall.
That's so crazy.
You need to take action right now. Go to battleforthenet.com and make sign your presence
petition.
Now.
Sign the petition. Let sign people know.
Sign up, honey.
Call up your senators. Call up your representatives. Say, I want net neutrality to remain.
Captain America is is relying on you to fight Hydra, Trump, Republicans, and the Russians from destroying what you love so dear.
Because could you imagine you're sitting in a coffee shop somewhere and you're like, you want to get on the internet, whatever, they have Wi-Fi there, and then you might have to pay a surcharge just to be able to get faster access every time.
I'm sorry, but your threshold for listening to this podcast has been exceeded. To continue listening to this podcast, you'll have to pay $40 to Comcast. Please hold while we connect you with customer service.
And remember, we paid for this infrastructure.
It's yours.
It's you yours. Belong, you it own it. It. You're basically just saying, here, corporate America, take this from me.
Baby, it is mine, and
it's like they're walking into your house and just grabbing, you know, like, I don't know, your baby dishes. Grand piano and being like, this is ours now.
Who has a baby grand piano?
Cody Melcher.
Yeah. Do you have a baby?
I do not have a baby grand piano. I have a saxophone. But
oh.
I have an upright a piano because I could only... It only fits that.
So Clay Aiken was on a podcast in North Carolina, I think is where he's from.
And Mr. Quarter Turns.
Mr. Quarter Turns.
Quarter Turns. Quarter Turns.
And he's saying that Donald Trump did not get to decide who got fired from The Apprentice, even though he made it seem as though he does. And that there was like there's a telephone sitting there on the desk, but it's not really a telephone. It's a teleprompter. And Donald Trump would just come in, sit down, and read these things off. He'd be just like, so you got into a fight this week, huh? And then he
yes, sir, we yes, did. Sir.
But he actually had no clue.
Yeah, and they'd send him notes. And then he'd be like, you two didn't get along, huh? And then so they'd say, you know, they'd have these conversations and whatnot. And then he'd just be like, you're fired. And he had no idea who these people were,
that
basically,
is so funny.
For the most part. You know, and that's like that with a lot of all those reality TV shows. They say, like, you know, one person's in charge and decides who goes off. But, you know, a lot of times it's a committee, you know, and the executive producers. Because, listen, these TV shows it takes a bunch of people to make them. And so all these components are kind of controlled.
What's the name of the gay music producer who orchestrated the meeting between Trump and the Republican?
Rob Goldstone. So he's a publicist.
He's a publicist. Publicists are evil. Disclaimer. But he's a publicist whose social media is full of him with A-list gays on yachts and at Fire Island.
The insta-gays. Yeah, so like hot young boy gays. So I don't know if they're A-list boys, but they're cute young boys. And so he's always like, he takes lots of pictures with lots of
Sean Cody gays.
The Sean Cody gays, a lot of New York gays hanging out. And so he orchestrated, I guess, the meeting between the Trumps and the Russians, because he was the publicist for this very wealthy, this billionaire. He's got a son who's a pop star over there. And so he was able to make some kind of connection between the two.
So if you guys visit our website, feastoffun.com, you can see a picture of Rob Goldstone wearing a gold cunty hat. This is the man who may be bringing down, who probably just single-handedly started the ball to destroy your country.
Yeah, and all his social media stuff is still up and around, and he's not taking it down. And so, of course, you know, there had to have been a gay connection in there somewhere.
Had to be one.
Well, thank you, Rob Goldstone, for giving us really unique, one-of-a-kind, socially relevant and politically relevant content for this podcast. And, it just boils down to me is that some of these people who create these, you know, A-list, exclusive, elitist gay events are some of the worst people in the world, you know?
Right.
And it just kind of like validates that. Like there was this one image of somebody who posted a circuit party and it was literally an ocean of white people. And there's like, this is what diversity is all about. And they posted it and everybody just on the internet is like, you suck. You're an awful human being. You monster.
My goodness.
But at the same time, you know, listen, these people are just drunk. They're rich. They're trying to make the best of their lives and share it with us.
Yeah.
I'm just mad that I didn't get invited to the party. I mean, would you go though?
Probably not.
Like sometimes we get invited to like yacht parties, you know, and I'm just kind of like, who's going to be there?
Yeah. Exactly. That was my question. When
you're
on a yacht,
you can't jump off. You can't swim for shore, even if the shore's like 30 yards away.
You can hide in the bathroom for a while. You know, one of my favorite party crashes is Justin Jedlicka. You guys remember him.
He's from the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
He was the human Ken doll. We did a couple of different podcasts with him. One of my favorite ones is How to Marry a Millionaire. I wanted him to come back on the podcast afterwards so he can do How to Divorce a Millionaire. There, but I think he signed a non-disclosure agreement.
The sequel, so
the two one that.
But
that
he tells happened. Us plenty of dirt up out of that we can't tell you guys. But if you're off the record,
we don't know anything. But anyway, so he was in Australia, and I guess he was at the Parliament House's. They had a fundraiser or something like that, and he showed up and took a picture of like a lot of the MPs there, and people were like, "Who brought this guy? How did he get in? Why does he look this way?" And So he's made it through all the gossip rags, and I guess you know somebody he did get vetted, he did pass security, somebody did sign him in, but they won't say who brought him in.
Well, so that's what the you know people's reaction to Justin Jedlicka or Goldstone. Well, with Goldstone is like you know how much money does he have? With Justin Jedlicka is how much money did he get?
Right.
Justin Jedlicka is just somebody who he looks like he stepped off another planet. You know, he looks very alien. Justin thinks he's gorgeous. And, you know, I believe that Justin is beautiful in his own unique, special way.
He's a new kind of beauty is what he calls himself.
He is. Yeah. And Justin loves, you know, he loves to be humiliated. And so part of his pleasure is to walk around at beaches and social events and everyone going in the room going, who the hell is that?
Why does he look that way?
Oh, my God. And he goes home and he's like, oh, yeah, baby.
He's carrying around. He's got his phone on record the whole time just so he can take it back
I
and
think
replay
he
it.
Is.
Yeah, it turns him on.
You know, and I'm like, God bless Justin Jedlicka for finding what he's good at and
loving it.
And loving it. I mean, I want everybody out there to find that for yourselves. I want you to find someone who looks at you the way Justin Jedlicka looks at photos of himself.
The way I look at photos of Krispy Kremes.
What's your ultimate passion, Jerfay? What's like your what's your secret passion that we may not necessarily know about?
My secret passion.
Yeah. Like, is it really Krispy Kreme donuts?
No, it's not really Krispy Kreme donuts.
Is it drag? Is it, you know, is a specific line of...
It's becoming drag. It's becoming drag for sure. It was theater for a while, and I thought that I couldn't live without theater. And then I took a break and started doing drag, and it's developing into the passion of my life, I think.
You're going to be at the Austin International Drag Festival.
Be at the Austin International Drag Festival. It'll be my first non-Chicago gig.
Yes, girl.
You might make it to Milwaukee before then.
Maybe. We'll see.
What's in Milwaukee?
You know, it's a nearby city. That's
I see. Yeah. That's where.
Or maybe you can go out to Phoenix now, out in Elk Grove Village.
Is that a bar named Phoenix?
Yeah, used to be Hunters. Yeah.
Make it all the way out to Oak Park, maybe.
Maybe get down to Joliet. They have some good drag shows in Joliet.
Yeah.
It's right off the prison.
There's also Maneuvers, right? Is that where Maneuvers is?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, Mark and I went to a drag show there, and there's this really hot guy in the back patio, and we started chatting with him. He's like, I got utility bills to pay.
No, he's just like, you guys like three-ways? And we're like, yeah sure.
Fuck yeah, you're so hot.
And then he's just like, well, I have a utility bill to pay. I'm like, oh, geez.
Oh, yes.
No. And then I start noticing, like, teeth are missing from the meth use. And it's like, no.
Yeah, well, I'm all about using your body to your advantage, but not when the body bites back.
No. Hey, have you ever wondered what it's like inside the Feast of Fun podcast studio or want to know more about how podcasts are made? Now you can. Schedule a visit to visit the studio and see how we've been creating our award-winning podcast for the past 13 years. Learn about the future of podcasting and how it can enrich your own life and bring you all the wonders of the world.
So when people come visit our home studio, what's that experience like? They just show up and they're like, you got canapes or something? Or?
Well, the thing is most people want to come and they want to look at a recording or they want to see what the setup is. And so we just go through what the setup is and we show them how to record and to do some things.
It's the behind-the-scenes Feast of Fun magic, that secret spice that makes everything so nice.
And they usually have a lot of questions already, so we're here to answer questions. And you get to see the equipment and we'll answer the questions and you can take a tour.
What are the five most common questions people ask us without answering them?
What kind of mixer do you use? What kind of audio do you use?
How do I get people to listen to my show?
How do
people
listen to the show?
How do you guys find guests?
How do you find guests?
And what kind of how do you decide what questions to ask them?
That kind of stuff, yeah.
And
what are the top five questions that people ask?
That is the the top five questions.
That's one of the questions.
And then I repeat and go on and on and on. And then they lock themselves in the bathroom and they won't come out. And I'm like, sir, the hour's up.
Come on, get out.
It is quite an experience, and you know, this is the set where we tape Cooking with Drag Queens in the other room, and
it's really cute.
It's a home studio, meaning that we live here and we work out of here, and we sort of like a piece of origami where everything's kind of like delicately folded into a flower to be efficient. This is more like Sanford and Son origami. It's chaos and captured into beautiful.
It's like those like content. Fortune teller toys we used to make with paper, you know, we like open up a new flap and there's something under every corner.
I used to make mine really dirty.
We all did. I think we all did.
Sounds like maybe if your friend's mom found it. It was like dicks, anal, blowjob, cocaine.
Jerfay.
Mm-hmm.
Wait. That's the one that bothers me.
Hold on a second. He's like, most kids have like marry, kill, fuck, or kill. Somebody like was listening to our podcast and they liked how I was describing Silence of the Lambs.
Oh.
And so they added me on Snapchat and they tweeted, forgive me, I just don't understand how Snapchat works. I have no idea. I'm like my dog looking at the television set, wondering when is that steak going to actually fall out of the screen into the floor.
It's a weird thing though, too, in itself. So
do you understand how Snapchat works?
I mean, I'm starting to get it, but like I miss out on so many dick pics because they go away and I can't get them back.
Nice thing about it is it's very ephemeral. But you know, the thing is, I don't know. People would send me these videos and a lot of times it's them on a playground and then they're going to the beach and then it's like, so it's like 30 seconds of like this stuff. And I'm just like, I don't care.
Like, I'm not there. Why do I have this point of view shot?
Yeah.
But every now and then you're like, oh my God, you're sending me my favorite kind of content. Me.
Aw. So I didn't know this. You know, Vice Diaz just shared a photo as I guess Willem talking to Alaska about where she got the hi from.
Hi.
And so you know it came from ISIS, right?
And Coco.
ISIS and Coco, right? And where did she get it from?
Oh, where did ISIS and Coco get it from? I know this, but I can't remember.
Mystique
Summers.
You know that, right?
Yes.
And did you know that I thought she was the originator.
No, she's not.
She's not. Do you know who she got it from?
She told me, but I forgot.
Angina.
I know. And where did Angina get it from?
From herself.
She's the originator.
On the highway.
She's the originator.
Oh.
Hi.
Oh.
Well, actually, it's more like this. It's like, hi, girl. How's it going? Hi.
Hi.
Hey, how's it going? You know, we're still having so much fun here.
And you do that so well.
And so the idea is that you sound like Urkel because a lot of young trans women may not have the guidance or resources to feminize their voice. And so when somebody who's pretty like this for the most of their lives tries to feminize their voice, they sound like, what is that cartoon character? Mr. something.
What?
Oh, Mr. They sound like, what is that? The Snooki. Sorry, like the Snooki monster.
I love how you're cracking yourself up over this. Look, his face is all like red.
I try to remember the, Snooki wants Snook.
What is it from South Park when they had Snooki as a golem-like creature?
Oh, I was like, Snooki doesn't sound Snooki. Like that.
Snooki wants pickles and Snooki.
I heard they're having a reunion show coming up or something.
Jersey Shore?
Reunion, I think, yeah.
I'm still a big fan of Nicole Pelosi Snooki. For a while, she was doing things with drag queens from Drag Race. And basically, it consisted of them being photographed together on a red carpet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's impressive that they were able to collaborate, because I know collaboration is such a hard thing to do, is to do a selfie with another person.
Oh, my Lord.
No shortage of shade here, honeys. The library is always open. Get your fabulous t-shirts, Feast of Fun t-shirts, inspired by great moments in drag, at our store, feastoffun.com.
Yes.
/store. If you're nasty. If you're ready for it.
I want to remind folks, too, that we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus, because your contribution to the show is what makes the show happen.
I want people to...
Stop it. People can find you on the Facebooks and the Snapchats.
Yes, you can find me on Instagram at Jeffrey, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y, Jerfay, J-E-R-F-A-Y, Jeffrey Jerfay on Instagram.
You're like spelled like Toffee Fay Candy, but it's Jeffrey and Toffee Fay.
What?
Right? Mm-hmm. It's Jerfay.
Mm-hmm. Jeffrey,
it's
like Jeffay.
It's the faggotization of Jeffrey, right?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's the gender fuck of my boy name. Yeah.
Oh. What gender do you identify as?
Right now, I'm male.
Yeah.
And then when I'm in drag, I'm queer. So I just identify. Well, I prefer she pronouns when I'm in drag. All right. But that's why I don't shave my beard, because I like rocking the gender fuck.
I'm all doomed. Back in the day, before Facebook and drag queens and all that kind of stuff, it was like drag queens would get really, really mad if you referred to them when their drag queen name when they were out of drag. Or if you referred to them with their boy name while they were in drag, or if you called her a she when they were out of drag. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
It was like,
I'm a man.
Well, it was a huge point of contention, and they would get really pissed at you.
Well, now queens get offended if you call them by their given name, mm-hmm. And they haven't given you the name. Like, if you know their boy name, mm-hmm. but they haven't introduced themselves to you as their boy name.
Oh, really?
They'll get mad at you.
So if I walk up to Lucy Stuhl, I'm like, hi, Ty. She'll be like,
watch you, fuck you.
Well, I mean, maybe. Some of them are more mm-hmm. about it than yeah. others, but.
25% of drag queens are named Brian. So
if just you so say you know.
Brian to some of
this
them.
This statistic is 85% accurate.
What's Katya's real name? I mean, birth Brian. Name. What's Trixie Mattel's?
Brian.
There you go.
That's two out of 100.
I see. I have a little list there. I think
I'm sure you're right. I'm sure there are a lot more.
It's interesting because, you know, when I was a young kid, I used to go to fairy gatherings and people like, you know, what's your fairy name? What's your fairy name? I'll be like, I don't
oh, like Madame Marvel, like what she just went to a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sweet.
Which is Madame Marvel is known to our audience as.
What's his boy name?
Seth.
Seth Nays.
Yes.
Sorry.
I'm like, our audience is like, who? Yeah,
we got to get him back on to talk some
He's
more about
so
that.
Cute. And he fell in love over there. I was just like, because when I met Seth, I was like, you are born a fairy. You need to go to this tribe. Find your tribe. I found mm-hmm. my tribe many years ago. And you know, you don't have to, you know, the thing about finding your tribe is that it affects you. It helps you grow and blossom into the person you were meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
And when people go to your events, you know, it's allowing them to heal a little part of them that is hurting by having fun for a night and transcend the oppression and
just
horrors
being themselves.
Of the world. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let your freak flag fly freely, if you can say that.
Let your freak flag fly freely.
It's really hard to say.
That was a lot harder to say than I thought it was going to be.
Especially after a couple of drinks. Fembots, freaks, flags, faggots. Free, fun-flowing fairy folk of all fun-loving shapes and sizes.
I am very impressed right now.
I'm used to saying F around here, you know what I'm saying? My name is Fossil Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this has been Feast of Fun.
With our guest,
Jerfay.
Jerfay. Lots of Fs here. Have a fantastic day, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.